Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me on Sundays here on KWAI 1080 AM from 8 to 10 AM, where we will discuss waste, fraud, and abuse in government, the environment, and some lighthearted subjects, and other issues you might have. That's Sundays, 8 AM to 10 AM, here on KWAI 1080 AM.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. And I might add, today it will be the Carol Cox Rod Tam Show. I'm happy to have Rod Tam here in the studio. As you know, he was following me the next hour, or the 10 o'clock hour here at KWAI, and he's back with me. We're going to be talking about a couple of things, and one of which is the tax credits and sale of affordable housing and all of that, and we're going to touch a little bit on the grants and the leases and the what do we call this, Rod? I mean, they attack you for the supposed violations that you have, and here we got guys giving away $8 million and $2 million and $15 million. But we're going to talk about all of that and hope that you guys have questions or comments for myself and Rod, and join in. 524-1080 is the number. Good morning, Rod, and
good
welcome
morning.
Back.
Thank you very much, Carol. Great to be back here. And unfortunately, I'm not doing any more radio. I'm doing a documentary at this time.
Uh-huh.
A documentary on our economy, which includes a topic that we're going to talk about, is affordable rental housing.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of the real politics behind the scenes. White.
Behind the scenes, I believe that it is so blatant now and so open. I don't think they've redefined covert and gave a whole new meaning to overt. Their actions are just so blatant. A while back, I actually wrote a letter asking for the resignation of Ernie Martin. And I guess they decide, well, depending on the source, they don't pay much attention to it. But I actually wrote a year or so back, 2 years ago, actually, titled Watchdog Calls for Council's Budgets Chair Resignation. Council Budgets Chair. That's when he was the money man, handing the money out hand over fist, right?
Yes, yes.
So, but he's still there and doing all of that. But let's talk about that briefly. Some of you out there may remember me bringing all of this, talking about Ms. Chong, Susanna Chong, her staff member, and her husband giving donations back to Mufi Hanneman, Ernie Martin, and that band of thieves. And that's what they are doing. They gave the money back. She never returned a call to us. We went there and photographed the place. And again, I'm trying to figure out how Mufi could indicate that he's thinking about getting back in. No, we're thinking about keeping him out and finding a way to get Caldwell and Ernie Martin and the other thieves out of the system. So this is the time. Is it correct?
Sure, yeah, and let me say this. You know, from one who's been in government for 28 years as a representative, senator, and city councilman, one thing I advise in terms of the public, don't let government investigate themselves, because they're going to hide things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when the mayor says that he's having an investigation by a private investigator, it's very questionable why he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess one is, if you don't want to be guilty of something, you'd be proactive, right? And
right.
Try to chase it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to have the city council, the city county of Honolulu Ethics Commission to investigate,
mm-hmm.
It's very questionable, because mm-hmm. the Ethics Commission, all those commissioners, the seven of them, are appointed by the mayor,
mm-hmm.
confirmed by the city council.
Mm-hmm.
And administration there is not civil service. They're appointed by the Ethics Commission. So why would you want to have an investigation? I tell the public, don't allow the city and county of Honolulu to investigate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be biased, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is not in defense of you. I'm concerned with the integrity of the entire system. We know Chuck Tato chased you as if you had stolen the Pope's ring. We know that. I believe that Chuck Tato went out of his way and set you up. And not to say you weren't guilty of whatever the charges were. I didn't weigh that. You apparently paid your dues and what have you, and the punishment. But the problem is how they approached it. Where was Chuck Tato at in this entire process the millions being handed over by Ernie Martin and the millions being handed to the Leeward Benefit Community Package and the shredding of documents and the tearing and ripping of documents? Where was he at in that?
Well, let me say this one thing very loud and clear, that the Ethics Commission, and especially the administrator Chuck mm-hmm. Tato, mm-hmm. has a discretion to choose what they want to investigate.
And who they want to investigate.
Right. In the case of me, yes, I made bookkeeping errors of $600.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was willing to pay it back and make the mm-hmm. bookkeeping errors. But no, they want to go after me in criminal, basically. And they even went after my wife for having receipts on, through my campaign treasurer, receipts on McDonald's because I treated my volunteers who happened to be some kids to kids' meals. And they say, well, we're going to throw a felony on her unless you take a compromise rod, Tam, as a no contest, so that we can go after you more.
Now, is it? Do you think this? Can you attribute it to the fact that you didn't kiss Danny Noy's ring or something on one occasion? Or what was it? I mean, what? You got to learn to kiss the ring, brother.
Well, I haven't kissed the ring from the Democrat Party or the Bill Boys Machine, and even including Danny Noy for the past 28 years when I was in office.
Yeah.
And what happened is what really broke the. The camel's back, basically, was my involvement in Kukui Gardens. Kukui Gardens is affordable rental housing and has been for many, many years by Clarence Ching, the developer. I was asked to save it because the owners of Kukui Gardens wanted to demolish it and build high-rises, luxurious high-rises, and commercial buildings.
Right.
And the rail would be right across the street from there, right on King Street. Right where there's a used car dealership, right in the corner of Dillingham and North King Street. But I stepped on the toes, quite frankly, of developers, and I was told after Danny Noy passed away that I stepped on his toes. I was even told that he had a contract on me. One of those old-fashioned type of contracts, you know, you next day you're surviving one day and next day you're gone, right? Quite frankly, and I was very fortunate. I was told that. That some people from the connection, or the syndicate, what you would call, spoke on my behalf because some of them came from Kukui Gardens.
Some of them used to live there.
So when you step on toes, you get the heat.
Right. And in this situation, and we're going to talk about it, we look at the Leawood Benefit Package. What I wrote in this letter asking for his resignation, Ernie Martins, this is prior to him becoming city council chairman. He was the chairman of the budget and where the money is. And if you go back and look at the history of Ernie Martin, how he has arrived, he was allowed to get his law degree on city time and with city money. And who gave him that special favor and all of that? So what I wrote back, this is just touching superficially on the surface. We think that this request is reasonable and is supported by our longtime concerns we've had and expressed in our investigation of numerous grants administered by the city's Department of Community Services. That's who he was with at one time. He headed that, right? For the Leawood Coast Benefit. For approximately 1 year or longer, we have had information that Mr. Martin tolerated grant committee screeners to serve as members of and officers of nonprofit organizations that receive grants through the LCCB, allow grantees to receive portions of grants and not have to account for the money they received, improper use of the grant money, and it went on and on. The same thing we reported to HUD, and I presented HUD with facts and interviews that individuals admit to me that work for DCS admit that they were shredding documents at the direction of their bosses, who is Ernie Martin,
to conceal. Shred documents is a tampering with records, and that's an illegal act. Remember that judge who was from the neighbor island? She did that. She tampered with records. And she made the records disappear, basically. And she was smart. She resigned. But then she was caught, and she had to do community service. It's a criminal offense, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah. It's a felony. But what's happening, when I read the paper, I see HUD talking about what went wrong, and HUD knew. I personally gave them specifics, names of who was shredding documents, what documents were being hidden in these things that are now that are up front. HUD at that time told me, well, really, the money was earmarked, we know, but once we give it to the city, they generally can do what they want to do with it. This is what Mark Chandler told me initially. Well, and I'm arguing, well, if it's earmarked, it's earmarked. But what about the fraud, and what about the kickbacks? What about the donations that they're giving? But here is what's puzzling. Chandler says that in his report, he only had so much information available to him to do this review. He didn't have all the files. Well, first of all, that's a big lie, because in the city system, the way it's set up, there are guidelines on federal monies. You must keep the records for 5 years. Prosecute them on that. You don't have to go any further. If you don't have the records and you've destroyed them, as I told him, they shredded them. If you don't have those records, prosecute it or ask for the money back 3 years ago. Don't play around. Secondly, Chandler tells us that this money that he has given, they don't have to account for it. But the Bureau of Board, what is it? The Bureau of Finance, Budget and Fiscal Services, I'm sorry, right, in the city. So Budget and Fiscal Services in the city, when a check is issued, they're the ones who give approval of payment.
Right.
Now, he didn't have to tell the public he can't find all the records, because there are records. If they shredded the records in Sam Moku's office or Ernie Martin's office, guess what? Just go to Budget and Fiscal Services, because they approve the payment. They know exactly what was given. But again, what's painful about this process? And it's just all lies. It's the federal agency is covering up for the criminal behavior, and I define it as criminal. It's none of these mistakes and all of that. You can't give people $8 million or $3 million in a leave with benefit package or whatever and turn around and call it a mistake. But it's just only certain people that are close to your camp. So what happens is he could have found the records and still can find all the records. But meantime, the city council is giving money earmarked to specific nonprofit groups now without any RFPs. That's the big debate right now, was at least, that they would pick a group. For example, Poor Dogs Ampersand Popoki got $330,000 that we're still following up on to buy a van for veterinarian care. Now, how did that one individual, Alicia Maluafiti, but she's also with Blake O'Shear as a board member was at the time, and some of the GMO people. How did she get earmarked specifically for a grant? So while the HUD is complaining that they didn't have all the records, this behavior is continuing as we talk right now.
You know, one of the things that I try to do in the government as a legislator was to make sure that the money was spent wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be accountable. And I found out in reality many times whoever handled the budget, whether it be in a state or a city, was based in terms of who they knew.
Right.
And setting up a nonprofit organization can be fairly easy, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how you word it. You know, the English language is how you word things, basically.
Right.
And, you know, in terms of HUD, the director of St. Chandler saying that he didn't know, basically. Mm-hmm. That means he's not doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's supposed to oversee everything, not wait for reports from the city or the state,
right,
in terms of how the federal money is being used. Remember now, it's our taxpayers' money,
mm-hmm,
that's being used. Mm-hmm. It has to be accountable. You know, it's just like, for example, University of Hawaii forgiving the loan, mm-hmm, which is crazy. Forgive the loan to the Department of Athletics of, mm-hmm, University of Hawaii.
Right.
Now, they took the money from students' tuitions.
Right.
You give, forgive the loan.
Yeah.
Right? Government does weird things. Mm-hmm. So you need advocates in terms of watching over government.
Yeah. Well, this process that they have invented, and this process that HUD has tolerated, this process that Chuck Tato has tolerated, this process that the chairman of the city council has tolerated, this process that the city prosecutor has tolerated, this process that the FBI had not been called in, but I'm sure if they had been approached by an entity outside of these knuckleheads, they would have grabbed hold to it. And that brings me to the other question. Why didn't Mark Chandler, he watched this thing unfold. He knew it was illegal. And why didn't he go to a federal agency, law enforcement, and say, it's federal monies, I can't deal with it. These guys got such sticky fingers, man. You know, you ask them to show you the right hand, they show you the left, and it's just a game. So this speaks to the veracity or the truth that this HUD, I think, in this practice, and by the way, while we're talking about this, I'm following a story, and I've met delays, this is where Pam Whitty Oakland, who is an employee, according to the city records that she filed, financial disclosure, and I reported briefly, she worked for St. Francis Hospital, that group. They built a building with monies that they received from the city through HUD, from HUD. Well, she got in, and they've completed the building, but once she got in, she ordered her employees to write a check for some $466,000 approximately to St. Francis. Chandler intervened and told them to give the money back. And this is as recent as April now. Give the money back. Take the money back from St. Francis. So instead of just saying we're going to prosecute you because we're already tolerating you for 2-3 years of nonsense, this is it, right? I'm referring you to the FBI. Why did he do that? Because he is part of the problem. Nobody is held accountable. So they, in turn, the city, got the money back. St. Francis returned the money. Here's the problem. I call up Budget and Fiscal Services. They tell me, the clerk tells me, the person that oversees this tells me, well, listen, why don't you call Pam Whitty Oakland and ask for the documents? No, I want your approval where you processed it, where you granted the money, the authority, because it's your responsibility, BFS. Well, she in turn tells me, well, no, I think you should go talk to them, Gary Nakata. Well, no, I don't want to talk to him. I want to talk to your boss, or you send me on the public records request. Okay, I'll refer you to my boss. Next thing I know, I get an email back from Pam Whitty's office saying, what is it that you need? We were told, Budget and Fiscal Services told us to contact you. So what does that tell you? As I've described it, Mayor Caldwell has some integrity issues. And he didn't just arrive on the scene empty-handed. He has baggage. And I mean baggage that where he's taken tax dollars, federal monies, and played loose and fancy with them.
Well, my response to all this is basically in government a lot of times, things are given of priority to certain individuals, favoritism, as you may call it, based on who you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of what the Department of Budget and Fiscal Services did in your request for documents, that was wrong. Mm-hmm. It's public documents. And yes, by statute, Hawaii by statute, state law, there is a charge per page for it, like 25 cents or so, right? And knowing you, you'd be willing to pay for that. But to refer it to Pam, basically circumventing the whole issue there,
right,
and try to hide things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say never have government investigate themselves.
Yeah.
Right? It's too much relationships going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Now, as we promised, we'd be talking about affordable housing. By the way,
I want to say one last thing.
Go ahead.
I forgot to mention that in terms of the administrator for HUD here in Hawaii, Chandler, I call it plain laziness in terms of him not doing his job as follow-up. It's a poor excuse, basically. Now, he should be held accountable also, too, to look at these reports and search out more reports, right? Question it, quite frankly. That's his job.
Yeah,
it's not a job that's an 8:30 job to 4:30 job, basically, and sit at your desk and drink coffee and answer phones and questions and so forth and just summarize things.
Mm-hmm.
It's to look into details to protect the public's interest money.
Yeah. If you read how this, even the paper, it says $90,000 was given back to, well, there was a letter that mentioned $90,000. They didn't want to disclose the name of the company. Why would you do that if you're going out and making these allegations or pointing this out? So this entire process, and I'm glad this morning in the Star Advertiser, finally, they put some of the stench on Mufi Hanneman. I know it must have been painful for the editorial staff. My God, they probably prayed over it about 18 times, consulted the big God in the sky on newspapers, because It's their own guy who they've served to us over and over and over again. Even when he's caught coming out of the devil's pit, the newspaper still pour ice water on Mufi Hanneman to serve him up to us. The man is absolutely, absolutely. Why he's not in jail is because nobody goes to the federal government and report what he's doing. Or maybe he can't be that obvious and do what he's done. The average Jane and Joe knows who this guy Mufi Hanneman is. Every car wreck, every drug deal scene, everything, it appears, it seems that they don't want to touch Mufi Hanneman. But this morning they did, I think, as I say, probably very painful for them to ink that in, that Mufi Hanneman was part of this supposedly possible kickback. But in fact, I've reported, I went to the Campaign Spending Commission's website and found that he reported getting money from Susanna Chung, ORI, so Anui Nui Plantation and all. So this entire process, and that is not the only group that gets it. What about our contracts and what about, RFPs and that supposedly RFPs, but it's really not RFPs. They already know who they want to have the job. They know the millions will go to whomever, right?
Well, you know, don't forget now, Hawaii is a small community, although we have 1.3 million people here in the state of Hawaii. And you look in terms of relationships, the store advertiser is not an innocent child, basically. Mm-hmm. They're associated with ORI.
Mm-hmm.
They helped ORI. They helped fund it in terms of donations to ORI when they asked for fundraisers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
They did pieces of advertising for them, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how do I know that? Because when I was a city councilman, I got invited to those banquets, right, in courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice. But, wow, what an affair. You know, fundraising galore.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for you, Carol. Basically, this wouldn't come out.
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing about the star advertiser. Anything that's juicy, they're going to hop on.
Yeah.
At first, they're going to be hesitant because the question is, what part did they play? What relationship did they have?
Mm-hmm.
But it's too hot to disregard it. That's what it is.
Yeah. We'll take it in increments, eyedropper. We'll introduce Mufi Hanneman's criminality to this in a small amount so they don't. We don't think they can digest it all at once. No. What it is that they don't want to serve him up. Mufi Hanneman, Kirk Caldwell, they are hand in glove. Ernie Martin is the stick that is used to stir the cesspool of crime and theft from the people. That's what he is, Ernie Martin, and the rest of them. I mean, I reported the Ernie Martin's campaign manager, Chad Sunioshi, is a convicted drug smuggler. How do these people gravitate to this office? Look at Mattoon that Caldwell brought in. Who's serving who here? But anyway, so that we stay true to our word here, affordable housing, it all relates.
Right,
because
right.
It's the same people making these presentations and representations to the people that they're representing the people. Okay, rental housing complex that are, the city owns the following 12 rental housing projects together. The projects and each a project located in the island on the island of Oahu. Here they are: Bachelor's Quarters in Ever Villages, Chinatown Gateway Plaza, Chinatown, Chinatown Manor, Chinatown, Harbor Village, Chinatown. Kanoa Apartments, Palama, Kulana Nani Apartments at Kaneohe, Manoa Gardens at Manoa, Marin Towers at Chinatown, Pu'ahi Holly, Chinatown, Westlake Apartments, Salt Lake, Westlock Villages, Ever Beach, Winston Holly, Chinatown. Now, real quickly, here's what I will say. The amount, it was in some of these documents, it says they're asking $142,000, if I might read it right. But again, if there's corrections later on, I will, because I've tried to call John Yang in a timely fashion and couldn't get him, and then I left a message that I'm going to talk about this matter on the show regardless if he calls me back. They try to pull that. Let's just ignore the boy. Right. Well, good for you. I'll grow up to be a man in 3 days, and I'll talk about it on Sunday, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, you're wrong if you delay. But he did, in fact, to his credit, he did, in fact, call me, but I was out after that point. I was relaxing, trying to get other things done. And so, John Jun Yang, if you're out there, I welcome you. Join me next Sunday. I'll leave it open for you. But here's the problems. They're selling this project, these projects. They're going to sell the property, but not the land. My question is, how much did the city council ask for this project? They say 142, but as you know anything, when you go to buy property, you don't just, the average Joe don't just give the market value or the asking price. You go in and you make an assessment. Well, I'm going to have to do water pipes, or these are things, and you dwindle it down. That's the style. Well, who is going to ensure that the public does not lose its representation? Well, Jun Yang has no expertise. He was with FACE. And what is his expertise? You need an army. These guys that are buying this as an army, realtors representing them, lawyers. What does Jun Yang come along? He was opposed to the sale of these properties, but now I guess they found it better to bring him inside the camp and soften and quieten him. Now, that's not an attack on FACE, but if FACE won't take issue with that, those are my statements. I stand with them. But here's the problem. Tax credits. So if the city council does not know when the amount that they're really going to get, and the bigger question is, when are they going to pay this money when they do decide the specifics and all of the credits? Then you got tax credits. So if 12 facilities bring up, and these coming with it is tax credits, here's the problem I see, and this is just theory from my perspective, is that if we give all these tax credits, how do we track them? We know in the movie Tax Credits, Carol Fukunaga, there was an issue that they couldn't track the tax credits. So if we give all these tax credits in the sale of this property, if they drag their feet in developing and coming through or following through, we experience problems. Who would be encouraged to come along and build new affordable housing? You know, I believe none, because the tax credits will be diminished to such a level it wouldn't be worth a developer's efforts. So there are some shenanigans going on in this sale. And what really grabs me is that I see Sam Moku and Ernie Martin and all of that group in the background, and then you look at the documents. It was done under their management. So I'm concerned that the public, we're going to find ourselves losing what is affordable, and then we're going to lose a potential for any new developments. And I ask that any of you out there that have a greater insight or concerns, please share them with us. Go ahead, Rod.
You know, basically, and you're right, the issue is tax credits. Why give tax credits to the prospective new owner?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I may give a comparison, Kukui Gardens, which I was involved in, 850 units. Okay, a complex that developers and I was told also Inouye wanted to demolish to build high-rise and commercial, you know, because very valuable land, right in the core of downtown, when you think about it. The state government didn't give the new owners, which half of it was sold to Cornell Partners, tax credits. So what is this tax credits?
Right.
You're gambling away money that belongs to the public, taxpayers. Okay? Now, our economy is in a bad shape. We're in a recession. No matter what the governor says, we're stabilized. We're not stabilized. There are more unemployed people today than 1 year ago, quite frankly. It's just that those people runs to call unemployed and not counted as part of the unemployed statistics, because unless you click unemployment conversation, that's when you count it. But if you're not clicking, then you're not counted.
Right.
You'd be unemployed.
Right.
So Abercrombie's trying to fool people, basically, that he stabilized the economy. And yes, I'm familiar with that. People have an election coming up, so they're going to say the economy is rosy. But you look in terms of what's happening. You go to, say, Costco. I see many, many senior citizens, a lot of my friends, and they're buying shopping cart loads of food. They're not buying for themselves. They're buying for the family because the family cannot afford it, basically, right? And then, so even when Abercrombie wanted to tax the pensions of senior citizens, he's crazy. I got to say that openly. I'm sorry, Neil, but you're crazy. You're taking away the bread and butter from the senior citizens. How many of them have to depend on meals and wheels?
Well, now, a little correction. They're taking away the bread. They can't afford the butter.
Yeah.
Have you seen the price of butter lately?
Oh, boy. Even the price of bread. Over $3 a loaf? Crazy nowadays. But anyway, Kukui Ghanis did not receive tax credit. Why give away the ship, basically?
Right.
Yeah, sure. It was my idea, to be honest with you, to sell the buildings, which are affordable rental housing,
right,
on city land. Because why? When I was a city councilman, I saw so many problems with the city trying to do the management. They didn't know how to manage. And then basically the buildings were in disrepair. Tenants were complaining. That was my district, Chinatown area. So I said, you know, you guys are not facilities people. You know, you don't know anything about repair and maintenance and so forth, and you don't have a system at doing it. So therefore, why not take the idea and sell the buildings and keep the land with the promise that when you hold the land, you hold the stick, so to speak, that you have to keep those units affordable according to the HUD specifications.
Right.
Okay? And that was the whole basis of it. I didn't tell the city administration to give away the ship, basically, which is what they're doing.
Right, yeah. And have a one-man staff in the Office of Housing.
That's crazy.
It's the perfect setup. You know, it's the perfect setup. It's like hiring a pit bull as a guard dog and then have all of his teeth taken out. Yeah, it looks as though, and you call it the Department of Housing, but there's something more sinister. So the big questions, the three questions, what is the actual price that the city council said that we will take no less than this? They set a price, but then we know that trade-offs. And then when will the city be paid this money? Third, the city council has to ask for these answers immediately before any progress or any proceedings, before they proceed any further, I should say, on this program. Because I believe that if it is properly investigated, this is what my theory is, I believe that it rises to higher than any fraud that we've seen in the city being perpetrated on the people. Because there's some theorize that these tax credits can be sold, and I know for a fact they can be sold, and they can be offered. Some say that they can be offered in instances on the stock market or whatever. Go back and bargain them off. But what is the city council going to do to make sure that they follow through, they deliver? What is the time frame? What is the timeline? You know, because they can nickel and dime the taxpayer to the point that while we still have the land, are they going to provide affordable housing to the people? And I think that, and I'm the little guy who's standing on the hill saying I think I see a wolf, but it's dressed in wolf clothing. I can see some bad behavior, and I don't believe they're coming clean with this. I believe Kurt Caldwell is up to it in his next with other people. There's a couple of people that I'm going to be looking into their involvement with this program. But the document says CBRE is who's going to actually get the buying. And they were found at, what is it, in 2012. But I have the purchase and sale agreement that is put out by the city council. So go ahead.
Yeah, I've been reading some of it, too. I haven't completed. But, you know, basically what you say is correct. What is the real price? The bottom line price that we're getting for the buildings.
Right.
Okay? And also, when are the payments due? And it's a good question, because the payments can be used as resources for public services.
Mm-hmm.
And also to put in a special fund for affordable rental housing in the
mm-hmm.
future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me refer to what I found out. There are over 10,000 registered people looking for affordable rental that have mm-hmm. registered with the state of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And that office on School Street, School and Lanakila Avenue,
mm-hmm.
basically. 10,000. And you know what? There's a 6 years waiting list. So
yeah.
You think, what is the plan of action? You know, when the payment comes, it should be part of the plan of action to be developed. The state, neither the state nor the city has any plans of action.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're wondering, where's their accountability in terms of this? Now, also, the city council should be the watchdog. City council should have public hearings questioning those three things. What is the real price? When is the payment? And also the responsibilities of the city council. What is their job in addition to the city administration? Now, besides those three items that you mentioned, there's a resolution back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And it's resolution 08-108. Okay. And I co-introduced that also, too, along with some other previous city council members. And it asks the terms of various things to be brought out into the open for public. And one is in terms of the question of the development and ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
To clarify in terms of what the mission is for selling
mm-hmm.
these building structures, the units, okay? And the mission is to keep affordable rental housing, basically,
right.
So they don't disappear, okay? You talk about homeless people. Quite frankly, we want to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
But is there enough care, a plan of action to do so? Whether it be the state or the city, there's no plan of action at all. There's
mm-hmm.
only a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Look what the mayor is doing, chasing off people off the sidewalks,
mm-hmm.
right? So they run away for the day and they come back again.
Yeah.
You're not resolving the problem, Mayor. Right?
Yeah.
And talk to them.
Mufi Hanneman, too, chased
right.
him. I still remember that cartoon I wanted to have. Here's Mufi with a stick for his recreation. Let's see how we can beat up on the homeless today. Oh, don't beat them. Let's just make some seats and chairs that they can't sleep on. Let's put some dividers in the bus benches and on and on and on. That's their affordable housing management. That's how they address the homeless issues. That's what they're about.
And by the way, Mayor, what you've done around Thomas Square, which was my district before, you put planters
mm-hmm.
on Britannia Street. You put them blocking the sidewalk. There's not enough room for the handicapped to mm-hmm. use the wheelchairs
mm-hmm.
through that sidewalk.
Oh, but they'll tell you. It's enough inches, but
yeah.
Why do you have to accomplish what?
Basically, you have to have a clear passage in terms of making sure there's a liability factor on the city, you know,
yeah.
quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I guess the mayor doesn't realize that. Okay?
Yeah.
But he should, because he's an attorney, right?
My
lawsuits will occur.
Yeah. And so, but these are some big, big issues that
yeah.
are
and
that lay at our feet.
Also,
here.
Too, you know, we got a question in terms of the management of these units in the future when they owned by a nonprofit organization. Okay? Are they going to properly take care in terms of management? And you got to involve the residents there now. They should be part in terms of bringing out their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
This was a big complaint.
You want to take a call?
Yes.
Good morning, caller. Real quickly, got a comment, a question?
Yeah, Carol, thanks for your guest, Rod Tan.
Hi.
Hi, Rod. You know, I brought the issue up with the sidewalks at Britannia. Because I'm visually impaired and I have people that are, I deal with in my group that are scooters and wheelchairs and accessibility. It's ridiculous to put these planters and haven't got feedback from the citizens, especially the disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a handy van eligibility center right there at the First Insurance building on the 8th floor. They do the assessments for people with disabilities for the handy van services to see if they comply with getting their car to the right handy van. And, you know, they put these planters You still got the homeless there on the, each corner of Victoria and Ward still camping over there. So they really, really haven't done anything for that. And I wish they can involve us people who have disabilities in the planning process of these sidewalks.
Donald, if I were able to, I'd like to offer this. I'd like to go out there and beat the bushes for a lawyer that would serve up a lawsuit. Uh-huh. Would you guys be, I mean, we hear this debate back and forth, back and forth. You've ridden them and they've ridden you and what have you, they're ignoring you. Uh-huh. I'm, you know, I don't know how to put it to you. I don't think they care about you, and I think you need to
put some
heat up. And I mean, how many times are you going to write them letters and the congressman and all those people and then come back? I would say that if I was a follower, you'd lose me halfway down the path because where are we going?
Uh-huh.
And you know, these things, these behaviors, they introduce – every day there's an introduction of a new obstacle to the handicap or the impaired, visually impaired, and on and on and on. So,
uh-huh.
But if you'd like to, I'd go and beat the brush for you and try to get someone. But let me get this other call.
Yeah. Let me also say this, that I wanted to help. I'm not in government anymore, but if you need somebody who understands and knows the government structure and process, whether it be in terms of the federal, the state, and the city, give me a call.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
My cell number is 216-5454.
Okay.
216-5454. And I'm willing to help.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I have friends, I have relatives who are handicapped.
Uh-huh.
Even my father's a handicap, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank
so,
you.
Let me know. Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Hello.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Hello?
Just wanted to...
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question real quick. We'd run
Hello?
It down.
Yes. Is that for me?
Go ahead. You didn't acknowledge.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, okay. How are you guys doing this beautiful Sunday morning?
We're fine. How are you?
Good. We're just fine. Everybody's fine over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We got to fine all those people. Fine all those people who's parking illegally with their tents. Because when the people feed the birds, they will get a $500 fine.
Uh-huh.
Now, if they park their tents and loiter, we're going to give them a fine. So that might help and give the solution of what's happening with us here in Hawaii.
Okay, Em. Well, thank you.
Okay,
good
thank
to hear you're doing okay out there.
Yes, we're doing fine. We're getting all kinds of fines.
Thank you very much.
We don't buckle our seatbelt. We got the fine. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And if you, we're implementing a new law. If you talk too long on the radio.
It's fine. Okay, bye.
Aloha. Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Yeah.
Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question? You can call right back. I just cut him off there. But anyway, this is a general attitude and the climate that we have out here floating around now. We're all having to walk around and try to figure what's being served up to us.
Oh, there he is.
Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question real quick.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Hi, I'm Carol and I'm Mr. Tam.
How are you doing?
Just real quick. I wanted to correct Mr. Tam. It's a lot worse than you think. That you said 10,000 on the waiting list for low-income housing. Actually, it's the waiting list goes up to, I've done the math, about 18 years, because there's only about 600 units that come available every year, and out of those, and there's many hundreds of units that don't get remodeled, don't get repaired. Because they don't have funding for it, so they just sit idle too. So, you know, it's a lot worse than that. And then we're going to sell the city housing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go in greater detail on the affordable housing issue. It's just that this one, I want to bring it to the attention. And if you want to call your city council and ask them, and ask the mayor to Stop this train and let's make an assessment and know where we're going and what are we going to do with the money, as Rod has said. So anyway, thank you, Dave. Good to hear you doing okay out there.
What's Mr. Tam's number now?
216-5454.
You know, I think you would be a wonderful spokesman to call Mr. Kippen, you know, the governor's homeless coordinator too, because he needs to be hearing from folks that are articulate like you, because he's not getting it.
Let me correct you. You talking about endowing someone with a name of importance? Colin Kippen is not a homeless advocate. Colin Kippen is, and I've met with him on the veterans issues. Colin Kippen is a judge who's worked for Nell Ha, and I have great respect for him in the past, but let me tell you something. He's not delivering, and he is nothing more than he has become a bully for the governor. He's a bully for the U.S. vets. He's a bully for the Veterans Administration. He is not an advocate. I will tell you that, and if he want to call in and if he's willing to come in, I'll sit here face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, and tell him. He is image of failure and deceit. He does not represent the homeless community. So anyway, I'm going
to
let
you know what happens with a lot of these so-called advocates, basically? They don't talk to the homeless.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
they do all these researches. They look at researches, and then that's it. You know, I had the pleasure, and I don't mind. I talk to the homeless. I find out what their problems are. And you know one of the basic problems talking about affordable rental? Basically, is that whenever you go to before rental, whether it be in terms of market price or even subsidized by government, you have to have that deposit. Now, if you have to have a deposit of $1,000, at the same time when you need to pay your rent of $1,000, who has $2,000 in their pocket? That's crazy, right? That's why people are homeless.
Well, anyway, Dave, we're going to pick up the subject. I'm going to ask Rod to come back for a longer discussion.
Oh, wonderful. He's very articulate. I thank him.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in. And folks, Rod, real quick, we got about 25 seconds.
Well, I really appreciate in terms of being here. You know, Mike, in the past, I was chairman for a housing committee in the Senate, and I was chairman also for housing and economic development in the city council. Mm-hmm. And I love to talk to people and learn. And what I expressed today and in the past and even in the future will be based in terms of what I have learned from others. Not just reading material. Reading material, you talk about researchers who had never been out there in the community and done their homework.
Okay.
What a refreshing thing to hear.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. My next hour, I'm going to have Dr. Elizabeth McNeil from the Department of Health, and we're going to be talking about tuberculosis and other things. If you'd like to call in, feel free, 524-1080. And thank you, Rod.
Hey, thank you very much, and
we'll
I'll see you next time. Very great.
Aloha.
Thank you. Aloha.
We'll see you in the next hour. Aloha.
Stay tuned for the second half of The Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Baby, underneath the shine.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. How you like the skies out there? I thought I'd play that. A little rain of falling, anyway. You know how the game's played here. If there's a song, there's a meaning to it. And in my little way of doing things. Anyway, I have, again, Dr. Elizabeth McNeil from the state Hawaii State Department of Health. And I wanted to talk to her and share with you out there, the listeners, and because recently there's a discussion on tuberculosis and its impact and how it could be spread. And I didn't realize I could be so ignorant. Well, I knew that, but that's why I try to read and go to school. But believe you me, I'm one ignorant person when it comes to the issue of tuberculosis, because there's so many stories out there and myths and what have you. And so I just thought, hey, you know what? It would benefit us all. Take a break and go get you a good hot cup of coffee. I think this will be quite informative. And we'll post all, as usual, on carolcox.com. But again, Dr. McNeil, thank you for joining me and taking the sudden notice of the request. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning.
Yes. What is your role at the, first of all, at the Department of Health?
Well, I'm one of the tuberculosis doctors, and so I'm involved in diagnosing and treating people who have tuberculosis, also help develop some policies and things so that we can get better control of tuberculosis here in Hawaii. And for another week or so, I'm the acting TB control branch chief as well. So I help cover for my boss when he's off island.
So what is tuberculosis?
Well, and when you mentioned that you were ignorant of tuberculosis, I think most of us are, because we thought it was going away. But like a lot of situations or a lot of illnesses in the United States, it seems that when we stop spending money to prevent it, it comes back. And TB also came back with a big time back in the 1980s, and it's still with us. It's a bacterial infection, and most of us think about people having tuberculosis in their lungs. But TB is much more complicated than that.
So when you say we think it's just in the lungs, what other parts of the body or areas of the body can be affected?
TB is an amazing bacteria. It can go just about anywhere. It can go to the brain, bones, even the eyes, kidneys, skin, lymph nodes. It can go to the lining around the lungs and around the heart. So 85% of folks that become sick with tuberculosis are going to have it in their lungs, but that means another 15% are not. They're going to have it in another location. And sometimes those are hard to diagnose. Even sometimes the infection in the lung is hard and challenging to diagnose. And that's TB disease. That's people who are sick with the illness. About a third of the world, an amazing number, have what's called TB infection. They're not sick. They're not contagious. They can't pass disease on to other people. But they're kind of ticking time bombs. They can become sick with TB later and then become contagious.
Wow. So how does one test for TB?
Good, excellent question.
Who and how do you test for TB?
Well, in the state of Hawaii, sometimes the health department, we do a skin test, and we do over 50,000 of those skin tests every year just in the state of Hawaii. But also our partners out in the community, so our clinics, our private health care providers, hospitals, they're also doing tests. A skin test is a test that looks for TB infection and also TB disease, but initially somebody who has TB infection can have a positive skin test, that bump, that red bump that people get, but that doesn't mean that they have TB disease. So that's one of the first tests. There's also a blood test that has been out. It's rather expensive. Not everybody does them. They're kind of hard to come by. But both the blood test and the skin test aren't 100% accurate. They can be negative when somebody has TB infection or TB disease. Mm-hmm. They can be positive when people don't have TB infection or TB disease. So there isn't a 100% accurate test. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is most likely to be affected by this? What age groups? Or is there any particular group of people?
Well, TB infection can happen to anybody who's around somebody with TB disease.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who is coughing up, who has TB in the lungs and they're coughing up TB germs, sick from TB, that's going to happen more often when you live in an area of the world where TB disease is more common.
Mm-hmm.
So right now TB disease is much more common in Africa, parts of Asia, former Soviet Union, parts of Latin America, a lot of countries where they're having more difficult time controlling TB disease. So
mm-hmm.
folks who have been traveled to that area or grew up there are more likely to have the TB infection. Now, only about 1 out of 10 people with TB infection are ever going to be sick from TB.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a hard thing to understand. If you happen to have a positive skin test, that red bump, and you were exposed to TB, you breathe the germ in, most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, your body is going to control that TB germ. You're never going to be sick. You're never going to be contagious. But about 1 out of 10 people will go on to have active disease. And that's folks that are having trouble with their immune system. They're having mm-hmm. trouble fighting or controlling the TB. And so TB disease is more likely to happen in the very young. Children under age 5 have a harder time fighting the infection.
Mm-hmm.
The very old, and again, we know when you're 50 and older, 65 and older, your doctor tells you to get the flu shot, tells you to get the shingles vaccine. That's because we don't fight illness as well as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
And then folks who have other health problems or take medications that impact their ability to fight infection. So people with diabetes, you don't think about it, but people with diabetes are 3 times more likely to get sick with TB if they've
exposed.
Got the TB infection, right?
Mm-hmm.
People whose kidneys aren't working, they're on dialysis, they may have cancer, or they're taking a group of medications that suppress or weaken their immune system. Those people are much more likely. HIV/AIDS, that's why we saw so much TB in the 80s, is that AIDS began to show up, and that caused people to have their TB also become active. If you have AIDS, your risk of active TB from the infection is 10% every year, not just a 10% lifetime chance, but a 10% chance every year.
I felt this was rather timely and appropriate discussion because I see in the news the South African, Mandela. He, in turn, some 26 years ago, contracted or was infected with TB while serving in jail, and now they suspect this is complications from that.
Yes, and that can happen. That definitely can happen.
And they describe that, what kind of environments is this found in? Is it wet, damp, dry areas? And I also, for example, myself personally, I had an aunt who, in way back, more than 50 years ago, contracted it. And they put her in a sanitarium. Is that practice occurring still, or what do you do to get treated?
Well, that's all we had. We didn't have any antibiotics until around World War II, and
mm-hmm.
then we had very few antibiotics that were effective against TB. Well, what do you do if you don't have drugs to fight it? You build up the person's health and immune system and
mm-hmm.
enable their body to fight it better. And you also remove them from folks where they're likely to pass the infection on. So
mm-hmm.
usually folks in the family or the household. So fresh air, exercise, and good nutrition, reducing the stress, giving people a lot of rest, were how we dealt with that. My great-grandfather
mm-hmm.
moved from cold, wet Pennsylvania to sunny California to fight his TB.
Mm-hmm.
And that was helpful. That was effective. But TB, actually, you can see TB disease in very cold climates like the former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
You can see TB in warm climates like parts of Africa and Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And Hawaii would be a good example of that. But what's interesting, too, is that to pass TB is you're not going to get TB from passing somebody on a sidewalk or even sitting next to them on a short bus trip. It's
mm-hmm.
just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely to pass when you're around somebody in close quarters for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So crowded living conditions or places like homeless shelters and jails in other parts of the country right now, there is a problem in transmitting TB in those settings.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate. We've got really nice weather here in Hawaii. We've got good airflow through our homes. A lot of us are outdoors for a good portion of the day. And those kind of settings are much less likely to pass
mm-hmm.
TB germs.
Now, as speaking about infections and spreading, you gave me this pamphlet here. TB is not spread by sharing books,
correct.
Pens or pencil,
right.
desk, food, plates, spoons or forks, shaking hands or toilets.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The germ has to get into the air and you have to breathe it in. So if somebody has active TB in their lungs and they are coughing or singing, I had a TB patient who was a soloist and he sang and laughing,
mm-hmm.
sneezing, anything that gets air out of your mouth, out of the lungs, into the air, is how it is spread.
So if someone is actually infected and they're concerned with their, and they're obviously on a medicine, a regime of medicines or what have you, it says here, how is it spread? Well, through coughs, sneezes, and when one speaks.
Right. Everything that we're doing this morning.
Well, I better stop laughing on the show. But then others would probably say, I'm spreading, not TB.
Yeah. Good humor. You're spreading good humor. That's good.
Go ahead.
And not everybody with TB in their lungs is contagious. We do a test. What gets down to, we talked about the test to see if you have TB infection, but the tests for TB disease are things like getting an x-ray to look at the lungs,
mm-hmm.
Getting people to cough up phlegm from their lungs, and then looking at that to see if there are TB germs in that phlegm, and then culturing it, trying to grow the TB germs in the laboratory. So we can count the TB germs in that patient's phlegm to see if they're coughing up germs. And if there are very few germs that they're coughing up or no germs seen, they're not contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And getting them on the right medicine, we can monitor that phlegm. And usually within a few weeks, sometimes it takes a couple of months, those patients will no longer be contagious, but they have to keep taking their medicine for quite a long period of time, even
mm-hmm.
beyond when they're contagious.
So what you're saying, a healthy person can have TB bacteria.
That's correct.
And not know it until it could be years.
That's correct.
How does that work?
Let's say I breathed in a TB germ. It goes into a certain part of my lungs, but my body's immune system, the part of us that fights illness, says, ooh, this is foreign. I need to control it. And it walls off that TB germ.
Mm-hmm.
And again, 9 out of 10 of us will go through life with that TB germ still alive, but being controlled by the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
But that 1 in 10 person who maybe has diabetes or maybe not eating right, under stress, or just getting older, that immune system, almost like a little, I tell the kids that we see that there are TB germs in jail by the immune system, the cells surrounding it. Sometimes that jail breaks down, the TB germ escapes, and if conditions are right, it can grow and spread.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when somebody has TB disease, when they're mm-hmm. actually sick and possibly contagious.
In this document here, you're saying globally, 9 million people become ill with TB each year.
That's right.
And more than 1.5 million die. So TB is not a death sentence if it's treated properly. And if that's true, what do you do to prevent death and how do you treat it?
The TB treatment is an area that our ideas keep getting updated, but unfortunately our tools are decades old. We need some new tools, new medications to help us fight TB, and new ways to test and identify people early who have TB. The earlier we find somebody and can diagnose them properly with TB, the earlier we can start the treatment and prevent them from spreading the infection to other people. TB is slow growing, so even the culture test where they grow it can sometimes take 8 weeks before we have a result, which, you know, is a long time. And so we usually don't wait. If we think somebody has TB, we might start medication right away before we even know for sure that that's the problem. Most people we start on at least 4 different medications. That seems like a lot of medicine, and that's more than 4 pills. That can be 7, 8, 10, 12 pills that somebody has to take every day. And if it's uncomplicated TB that doesn't have resistance to the drugs we're using, we're usually done with treatment in 6 to 9 months. But that's a lot different than something like strep throat, where you may take medicine for a few days or a week or so. TB has to be very long term. If somebody is resistant to the medicine, then we may have to treat them for as long as 18 months to 2 years, and that is a long time to take medicine.
If you could describe some of the symptoms, or there's a pulmonary TB, what are the symptoms, and what should one look for, and what should they do once they, if they think, you know, I don't want to create paranoia.
But it's a good thing. That's what we wanted. We'd rather see more people who don't have TB than to miss a case. That's our goal, is to try and screen as many people as possible. We want to find people that don't have TB rather than miss somebody who does. TB is slow to start in the body. Like I said, it was slow to grow in the lab. It's slow to grow in our bodies too. So for a long time, people can have changes on their x-rays. We can see the TB developing in their lungs before they'll even feel it. But once it really gets going, people will often have a cough that's lasting more than 3 weeks. People have a cough that's 3 weeks or longer. They need to see their doctor. Sometimes they can cough up blood. They can lose weight, feel tired. They may also have some fever or chills or sweating at night. But for a lot of folks, they don't have all those symptoms. It's kind of unusual for somebody. They've usually been sick for a long time if they have all of those symptoms. And other illnesses can also cause those symptoms.
And there seems to be various groups that are impacted. Pregnant women, they're impacted. And I noticed that in this write-up that you've provided, that a large number of them in childbirth time frame actually die.
TB can be pretty hard on pregnant women. What's important to know, and we've had cases too where we've had a mother who had active tuberculosis, but it wasn't picked up, it wasn't diagnosed, and she delivered a baby prematurely that needed special care in the neonatal intensive care unit, and here was this young mother visiting the neonatal intensive care unit to visit her baby, and she had contagious pulmonary TB. So doctors in this community know they need to check pregnant women by doing a skin test. Women can also safely get an x-ray. If this is a new positive skin test, they need to get an x-ray so we make sure that they don't have active TB. And TB can also be safely treated during pregnancy.
Now, I can't afford, if I'm an individual, can't afford to pay for a test. Where can I go to obtain a test or be tested?
The TB skin tests, and if you need the x-ray because your skin test is positive, all of that is provided free of charge by the State of Hawaii Department of Health. You can call our number to get the locations. Our public health nursing offices also provide that testing. That testing has been cut back recently all across the country because there is a national shortage of the material that we use for that skin test. But we still have skin testing ability. We can do the test for folks that are concerned about having TB mm-hmm. because they've got symptoms, or they're referred by their doctor because they're going to go on one of these medicines that affect their immune system, or they've been exposed. So we've held on to some of our skin test materials so that we can still take care of folks who are at the greatest need. I suspect in the next few weeks or month or so, we're going to start being able to open up our doors to everybody who needs a skin test for work mm-hmm. or school. Mm-hmm. But at the present time, we're just offering it to folks who are at the greatest risk.
Mm-hmm. Now, to get a test, what is the location, and do you have the number offhand that I can...
Yes, our main number is 832-5731. And that we are back at 1700 Lanakila Street, right by school in Lilija, up in Kali'i. So we're back into business. We open our doors at 7:45 in the morning, but call ahead to see if the test is available for you. If you're getting it because you work in a restaurant or you're wanting to get your child tested because they're going to start school, right now they don't need that skin test in order to go to school or go to work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a special emergency rule saying those requirements aren't needed right now. And that's going to go still, I think, until August 11th, that special emergency rule is in effect. But we might start retesting. We might start testing folks again
mm-hmm.
Earlier than that. I expect we will.
Mm-hmm. And it is important that they get tested, because I'm looking at this document here, impact on children. 500,000 children become ill with TB each year.
That's right, and that's across the world. It has a major impact. You know, the United States, we have much, much fewer cases of tuberculosis than other places.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii, though, has a much greater amount. In fact, usually we're the number one state for the number of TB cases for our population size. This past year, Alaska beat us out, but we generally have what's called 9 cases per 100,000 people in our population, mm-hmm. usually about 120 cases of active TB a year. We haven't changed much. Generally in the United States, that figure is more like 3.4 cases. So 9 versus, we almost have 3 times what the national average is for TB cases for our population size.
Mm-hmm. So this is, the cure to it is preventive and detecting it and having aggressive treatment. But
that's right.
It requires the individual to go first and not wait until through a job, employment, or whatever, or what have, or family member.
Right.
We should all...
Should be thinking about it. Should mm-hmm. be thinking about it. And again, there's a lot of other things that'll cause a prolonged cough, coughing for more than 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that cause weight loss and fatigue. But folks here in Hawaii need to be thinking, could this be TB? And, you know, go in and talk to your doctor. Your doctor's going to look for other things other than just TB.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Carly. You have a comment or question for the doctor?
Yes, sir, I have a question for the doctor. You mentioned that maybe in the late 40s, early 50s, TB was treated with maybe very few drugs. Was streptomycin one of those drugs?
You were right. Very good. In fact, actually, what's amazing is that we're having to, in some cases, go back and use streptomycin again.
Yes, ma'am. And the other thing is, I think in the 70s, didn't they use cocktails like, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, like Mianbithol and INH?
Yes, ethambutol and INH, yes.
Is that still used today?
It is. See, so you've just gone and demonstrated a point for me very well, is that the medicines that we have are some of the earliest, oldest medicines. There was another one called PAS, P-A-S, short for a very long name. and when we have somebody who is drug resistant, we are sometimes having to go back and even use that medicine. And streptomycin has a major disadvantage in using it. It's an injection. So when we use it here in Hawaii or elsewhere, we're usually giving a shot to the patient 3 to 5 times a week for 6 months. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
I just have one other question, and not to talk over you. are there similarities in the lung between TB and sarcoidosis?
Yes.
And if you have active TB and your immune system is able to deal with it, doesn't it calcify that spot in your lung or the spots in your lung?
Yes, it can. Here? Yeah, with time, you get like a little scar in your lungs, and those can fill up with some minerals like calcium and they'll look white on x-ray. But yes, that's exactly what can happen. And you're right. Other illnesses, there's even fungal infections that we don't see here. I saw more often in Arizona, parts of California. They can cause very similar changes in the lung that TB does. So for some doctors, it's hard to know what's going on.
Yes, ma'am. Another question I had was like public transportation. You say short rides may not affect the person, but we have such a diverse society here, people from all over the world living here.
That's right.
And taking public transportation, say if you took a short ride, and you're taking a short ride twice a day and maybe six times a week, that would probably increase your chances, maybe, if, would you think? So.
Well, you know, it's a good question. Most of the time, the folks that we have that end up being sick with TB were infected either in the household, a family member had TB and that's how they caught it, and years later they become sick, or they were infected elsewhere in the world. And it's hard to know about the transportation, but the Centers for Disease Control have looked at airplane flights. Now, that's really a closed system, but they do bring in a lot of air. They dilute the air. If you can dilute down the air, like opening a window on the bus or in a home, you reduce the chances of TB being spread there. And they only look at flights that are 8 hours or longer. So, and that's sitting next to somebody who has TB. So on the bus, chances are probably very small. Can't be zero. We can't say zero, but it's smaller than you would think. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. I just have one other question.
Yes.
As far as resistant strain or strains of TB,
yes,
that they're seeing now, can you briefly touch on, do we have any kind of antibiotics that will deal with it, or is there any research going on that to deal with this? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. This is an excellent question. And everybody hears about what's called MDR, multiply drug resistant TB, or XDR, extreme drug resistant TB. And we do see multiple drug resistant TB in Hawaii, but the numbers of those cases have been very low,
mm-hmm.
One, maybe two cases a year. So we're fortunate here. For some strange reason, our numbers bounced up. We had six cases last year.
Mm-hmm.
Those people, because the treatment is so long, those people are still undergoing treatment. We do have drugs to treat those folks, but the treatment is, there are more side effects with those medicines. They're harder to give. Like the gentleman mentioned, streptomycin, we use medications related to streptomycin, but they're injectables,
mm-hmm.
Very hard on patients. And some of these medicines, again, like I said, have more side effects. They're more upsetting to the stomach. They have to be taken several times a day. They can affect your hearing, your kidneys. So we have the tools, but they're not the greatest thing in the world, and they're not as effective as the frontline drugs that these folks are resistant to.
Mm-hmm.
We have not seen extreme drug resistance in Hawaii. Most of the time, those people are treatable, too, but there are some cases that are so drug-resistant that we can't cure it. Right now, I can cure regular TB, like I said, 6 to 9 months usually.
Mm-hmm.
Our cases of drug-resistant TB, we've also been able to cure, but we don't know as much about treating those folks. We don't know much about how successful we are, what's the best way to go. There are some new drugs that are coming out. Some of them are drugs that we used in the past to treat other things like Hansen's disease or leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
The germs are very similar. So those medications might also work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some newer medicines that have been used elsewhere in other parts of the world that show some promise also. But again, we're a little more uncomfortable with those medicines because of the greater risk of side effects and the fact that they don't quite work as well.
So if a person is on that regime of pills, or it's important that they continue. I note in here you're mentioning that the bacilli becomes a little more resistant.
It's you get a response very early on when you start treating people with tuberculosis, but it's not a germ that goes away quickly like other forms of pneumonia or other bacterial infections. You do have to treat it for a very, very long time. And again, because you start off with many, many pills, the first 2 months, generally you're taking those four different kinds of medicine. And then the next 4 to 7 months, you're usually taking at least two medicines. And I think that's hard for anybody. I mean, even to take an antibiotic for a week to 10 days, we're not the best at taking them just like we should. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not. I know my husband's not. We do something that the World Health Organization recommends for the whole world. CDC, Centers for Disease Control, definitely recommend. We do this, I'd say, every patient that gets treated by the State Health Department is on what's called DOTS, or directly observed therapy. That's where we see the person take the medicine, and we see them take every dose. We count doses. So instead of somebody taking medicine for 6 months, we count so many observed doses, and we make sure that they have taken enough medicine for 26 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If they miss a dose, they still have to take another dose toward the end of that treatment. So we often go to the home and give them the medicine right then and see them take it. We can do Skype on the computer. There was this old phones, kind of like from the Jetson cartoon, where there was a little picture on these funky old phones called VisiPhones.
Right.
But iPhones. So we can do a video or see that person take the medicine. And I think that has made the biggest difference in not only curing TB, in getting those people to be no longer contagious as soon as possible, making sure their TB doesn't come back, but it's another way of preventing the development of drug-resistant TB. If you only take some of your medicine, or you don't take it all the time, or you don't finish a full course, and that TB hasn't completely gone away, it can come back, and the germs that are going to come back are the ones that are resistant to one or more of the drugs that you were taking before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very important that we make sure everybody takes everything that they need to.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what the caller referred to, kind of the drug cocktail to get at all the germs that that person has.
524-1080, if you have a question for my guest, Dr. Elizabeth McNeil. She's with the Department of Health, Hawaii State Department of Health. Remember the number to call if you want tests or have questions or need to consult someone from the Hawaii Health Department of Health, 832-5731, and they're located at 1700 Lanikila Street in Kalihi. So, but make sure you call in first. Don't just show up, because I very seriously doubt you have an army of people to...
We do. Oh, we have a great group. Public health nurses are the core of public health. They're wonderful. And these nurses, a nurse is assigned to each patient. It's kind of like their case manager. Another advantage of doing this directly observed therapy is we see the patients every day. So we can see, are they having problems with the medicine? Are there side effects that we need to address? Do we need to change the medicine a little bit? How is their TB doing? Who is in the household that they may have exposed that they didn't think about? And so public health nurses are wonderful. And if the person is having other problems, we've had folks that, I'm sick with I'm sick. You've diagnosed TB, but I had a plane reservation to go to Las Vegas next week. So we've worked with the airlines. My nurses will get on the airlines and say, you know, this person needs to reschedule. Can you do it without charging them the reschedule fee? And Hawaiian. I don't recommend that everybody start calling us to do this. But Hawaiian Airlines has been outstanding in working with us in helping our patients relax a bit, reduce some of their stress, help them out. You know, while they're starting their medicine and they're contagious, obviously they can't go to work. So we work also with the employers to say this person's got to stay home and has an illness that needs to be treated. So
Now, the cost of this, how are you folks funded? Is it just general funding?
We have two main funding sources. Of course, the state of Hawaii, so the tax dollars support us, and we're very lucky to have that kind of support so that we're not facing the shortages that some other jurisdictions on the mainland have had trouble with as far as being able to test patients for all they need to be tested for and provide them with the medication that we really feel is best for the patient. The state of Hawaii helps us with that. But a lot of the other things that go on in a health department program, looking at how many cases of TB and who is getting TB, also looking at the control measures, going in and testing the folks in the household who might have had the exposure or at work who might have had an exposure, the school. We've had a recent, we call these contact investigations, at a high school in Maui. And those kinds of things are supported also through this funding through the federal government, through the Centers for Disease Control. We also have some research that we're doing as well that's also supported by Centers for Disease Control. And that's to look at our skin tests versus the newer blood tests and which test is the best at predicting who really has TB infection and who is more likely to go on to have active TB disease.
And again, a person comes in and be tested. This is still HIPAA and it's all privacy. And correct, and what measures are taken?
There are some exemptions to HIPAA, and so for the doctors also out there, they know that they're HIPAA exempt because there's a law that says if you suspect TB in one of your patients, you have to report it to the state health department, and that's us over at Lana Keela, and you have to provide information about that patient. And that's also, we also make those reports for the centers, to the Centers for Disease Control, so they can track TB across the entire country. But otherwise, for example, somebody comes in and says, I'm afraid to be tested for TB because you're going to tell my employer that I have TB. We're not. We're not. We'll tell the employer, we'll provide a letter for you that says this person can't go to work right now, but we're not going to tell that employer that their employee has tuberculosis.
So there's no excuse to not to get tested and not to fear that you'll lose a job because your program or your process is to protect that. But the goal is to treat and prevent the spread of it, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And we don't lock up people with really rare exceptions, and I'll talk about that. Most people with active tuberculosis, even the contagious form of tuberculosis, can be safely treated at home. There's some very simple measures that they can take at home to prevent transmitting this germ onto family members and loved ones. We control it in our clinic. And the biggest thing is a mask. Mask or fresh air. So we don't see TB germs being transmitted from patients to the employees. Which is good. So very simple measures can protect folks, but most people can be safely treated at home. They don't have to be in a special hospital. Rarely, and this happens less than once a year, we've had people for whatever reason have not wanted to stay at home and use a mask and prevent transmission to the public. And then those folks, we have to take we have to go to court and say this person, while they're contagious, needs to be in an institution where they're not going to spread the TB germs any further until they're no longer contagious. Once they're no longer contagious, and that may be a few weeks or a few months, then we can let them go. But this doesn't happen very often. Most everybody understands that they need to protect their family as well as the community when they have active TB.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yeah, I got a comment regarding this presentation of tuberculosis. It's one of the most accurate presentations that have come out of the state health department. I was involved, I was in the Navy Medical Service Corps back in the 60s, and we had a big problem with tuberculosis in the military. We had a heavy cruiser, you can probably Google it, the USS Rochester, where there were some active cases of TB, and it ended up with about a crew of 700. There were about 400 or 500 converters. Because of the enclosed environment of a Navy warship, similarly, a nuclear submarine out of Charleston had a similar situation where there were 60% converters.
Wow.
Aboard the crew, and also in Congress. There was an episode where there was a whole bunch of people in Congress investigation with converters of TB, and it was traced, I was an epidemiologist, it was traced through the tunnels that, air-conditioned tunnels that went between the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
So you can have a situation in a closed environment where population where the TB is spread.
Exactly. And what you're describing is perfect. Long time contact, enclosed areas, lack of fresh air, and that would be the perfect setting to transmit TB.
Yeah,
perfectly awful setting to transmit TB.
And as a result, it was determined that the enlisted men got x-rays, chest x-rays, when they re-enlisted. So every 4 years, they'd get a chest x-ray.
Right.
Whereas the officers had to have an annual x-ray medical exam. So the Navy changed their policy, or probably the military, to have annual x-rays for all the people, because here they had active TB cases, maybe aboard ship or a submarine for 2 years, and spreading it through the air conditioning and the air system.
Wow.
So institutions are subject to, quote, TB epidemic.
Yes, they are. And in fact, in Los Angeles County right now, they've had an outbreak of tuberculosis in their homeless population, and it's been in shelters. And I can't imagine, they've got a bigger staff than we do, I know, but they are having to find 14,000 homeless people and test those folks to make sure none of those folks are getting active disease, and to help prevent them from going from TB infection to active TB also.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm showing my age, but at that time, all the converters were treated for 1 year on a combination of streptomycin and ionized. For all the converters. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Normally, subcommittee health department is a question, but this is one of the most accurate presentations.
Thank you very much. And, you know, this helps say, TB has been around for a long time. It's not going away. I think they found Egyptian mummies that had evidence of tuberculosis. So.
Well, showing my age again, in elementary school, they used to sell these little red crosses with a double cross.
Yes.
And that goes way back when,
when
they were raising money for TB, which after they kind of controlled it, they started using the same program for other diseases. But anyway, thanks for the presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other thing about, going back, we treat TB infection. So people who are not sick, but we want to prevent them from getting active TB later, there's a couple of things that we can do. And most people will either take isoniazid, at INH, which this gentleman mentioned,
mm-hmm.
for 6 to 9 months. It's a little bit shorter. We played around over the decades. We've figured out that 9 months is probably the best, but 6 months is pretty good, too. And some folks can take a newer medicine called rifampin for 4 months. Children and folks with other health problems may need to take it for 6. There's been a nationwide shortage of INH, or this isoniazid medicine also, and rumors that we may have some other drug shortages across the country. So this has made it difficult for health departments, but it also made it difficult for our private doctors to see these things, these drug shortages. The other thing I want to mention is, and this gentleman also helped kind of highlight that, TB can happen to anybody if you're exposed to the germ. And there is still so much stigma that I see in a lot of the population in Hawaii and in the mainland that somehow TB is an infection of bad people,
mm-hmm.
or poor people, or people with lack of morals, or somehow they're ashamed. The TB diagnosis makes them ashamed. I had one gentleman who would not tell his regular doctor, his primary care doctor, that he had tuberculosis because he was too ashamed. I've had families where a family member is diagnosed with the disease, but other family members say, don't talk to us of TB. We don't have TB. We don't have something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Mexico, if you want to insult somebody, you tell them that they have tuberculosis. It's a major insult. So that also makes it harder for folks to come in to be tested. That's not what they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it harder for the people they've exposed to get screened and evaluated and get preventive treatment. And it also must create a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
I like to tell folks that one of the patients I treated a year ago was a very successful eye surgeon. So TB does not just pick on anybody. It is more likely if you've got some stress or some age on you or some health problems on you, but it can affect anybody. I had a nice grandmother from Idaho a couple years ago that had rip-roaring TB. Her family was actually very happy because they thought grandmother had lung cancer. They thought she was dying of lung cancer. It turned out to be tuberculosis. So people mm-hmm. should not feel any shame. My great-grandfather, your aunt had mm-hmm. tuberculosis.
Yeah.
You could have been exposed. You could later on one of these years mm-hmm. be one of my cases.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no
Well, I'll
no
keep
need.
Your number in my pocket.
You got it. Anytime, give me a call.
And I must say, without being disrespectful, if I call up and I'm breathing heavy.
I'm going to listen for the cough. I'm going to listen for the cough.
Yeah, but I really appreciate you taking this time. It was a short notice, but I like to do this more often because it's prevention. Education is part of prevention. The less you know about something, the more susceptible you are to it, and it's sneaking up on you. But what things can be prevented? Is there an inoculation or against TB? A vaccine?
There really isn't an effective vaccine. Now, folks that were born in other parts of the world often at birth get a shot called a BCG. In fact, they probably have a little scar in the upper part of their arm
mm-hmm.
if they got that. In some places of the world, you even get boosters. You'll get one at school entry mm-hmm. when you're 5 or 6, and again, maybe when you're a teenager. That BCG vaccine, isn't used here with rare exceptions. It's used in some gentlemen who have bladder cancers. Yeah, it kind of stimulates the immune system to fight the cancer. But most of the time we don't use it. And it had a purpose in children. It prevented them not from getting TB infection, but from having the TB disease where it goes to other parts of the body like the brain. TB meningitis or TB infection of the brain is still a very, very serious form of the disease. It is sometimes still fatal, and it requires often 12 months of medication, much, much longer to get to the brain, to get to that area around the brain. And the BCG vaccine probably prevents the TB germ from going to all these other places, the bones in the back, the spine, things like that. But it doesn't prevent infection, doesn't prevent disease. We need a vaccine. The skin test, again, helps us decide if somebody might have the infection, the inactive, the TB dormant form. Mm-hmm. But a third of the world has that. That's a lot of people to give preventive medicine to for months. And the preventive medicine isn't 100% either. So let's say I had a positive skin test. I took INH for 6 months. I still have a chance. I've reduced my chance from a 1 in 10 chance of active TB without the medicine to a 1 in 100 chance. But that's still a pretty big number of people to end up with active TB. Mm-hmm. So preventive medicine isn't 100% effective. A vaccine would be wonderful, but I think that's quite a long ways out.
Well, Doctor, thank you for joining me and giving us some insight. And feel free to always consider us a friend here with getting the word out. If you have any other topic you'd like to, please give us a call.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And for you listeners, we'll be back next week. We'll be talking some more about the grants and all of that. But I appreciate and I hope this was helpful to any of you out there. Again, for the health department's number for TB, the office is 832-5731. They're located at 1700 Lanikila. What is your website address real quick? Do you recall? Or we can find it. We'll post it up on our at carolcox.com.
Yeah, if you go to dohhawaii.gov,
okay.
That should be able to get you to TB control.
Okay, well, thank you, doctor.
Thank you very
Aloha.
Much. Aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.